The federal government is investing more in rural health in the upcoming financial year, and there's a new seasonal agricultural visa in the wake of the Australia-UK FTA agreement announced this month. Tony Passon, member for Barker, joins me now. Hi there, Tony.
Good morning, Jenny.
Let's start with the visa. What's the plan?
Well, of course, on the back of the UK-Australia free trade agreement, which has been agreed in principle by Prime Ministers Morrison and Johnson, we're going to extend the opportunity for UK citizens to come and do seasonal work in Australia. At the moment, if you're older than 30, you're not eligible. We're extending that to 35. We're also saying that you can stay in the country for 3 years. And separate to all of that, we're going to establish an agriculture-specific visa, ag visa, if you like. And that'll enable seasonal workers to travel between countries, bring their skills with them. In particular, I'm thinking a great example of that might well be shearers. So shear in the UK during their season and then come to Australia and participate in our season. I mean, that's a great win-win because it'll mean more skilled workers in the market for Australian farmers to take advantage of.
Right. Now, there has been some alarming allegations of wage theft in fruit picking jobs in some farms. Is the government doing anything to ensure these visa holders aren't being taken advantage of?
Well, the reality is, Jenny, that if people are breaking the law, they need to be dealt with. Fair Work is the relevant authority, and I would encourage anyone listening to your program, if you think you are being underpaid, and we had an alarming allegation in the Parliament this week of someone who'd worked a whole day picking oranges for $25. Now, I don't know if that allegation is true, but if it is true, it's a breach of the Australian law and Fair Work will deal with it accordingly. And so I suppose what my message is, government has established the proper processes to ensure that people who are being taken advantage of, who are being underpaid, can seek recourse, just like any Australian can who's being underpaid or is being treated in ways that are inappropriate and unconscionable.
So do you think with this visa opportunity for people in the UK, with more Pacific Islanders coming in and opening up to other countries, we're going to start to be able to turn around this issue of just not having enough of a labour force?
Well, that's certainly my hope in the short term. I can tell you I was very concerned about the citrus harvest, but my discussions with Citrus SA tell me that the Coringa facility has worked a treat and the Pacific Islanders who have been able to facilitate their entry to Australia via that facility have done the job on the ground and continue to do the job on the ground. And I'm told that we're not seeing any disruption in relation to that harvest. But ultimately, Jenny, long term, I'm saying to my colleagues, to the Prime Minister and others, that we need to consider seriously an approach to unskilled migration into Australia. I think it's great that we've got seasonal workers that come and get the job done. It's a relief for farmers. But I actually want people to come and live in Australia, live in regional Australia, enrol their kids in the schools, volunteer at the CFS, play footy on the weekend. That's how we build these communities. Fly-in, fly-out workers like this are great if you need them, but they're not the long-term solution. And we haven't had serious unskilled migration into Australia since the end of the White Australia policy. My parents came to Australia from Europe seeking better opportunities. I think we should provide that opportunity to a new class of future Australians. It won't be continental Europe this time. It'll probably be Southeast Asia and the Pacific. But I'm hopeful that one of the outcomes of this pandemic is we realise that we actually need to encourage unskilled people to take up jobs in regional Australia in return for a future in Australia.
And has it been going well with the Coringa quarantine facility? Is that the sort of direction you'll be going in, trying to get people in?
Well, the feedback I've had is it's been going swimmingly. It's a nice little pilot project for other communities around Australia. Queensland, of course, allow on-farm quarantine, which I think is the gold standard. But we heard last week an announcement that the South Australian and federal governments are coordinating in relation to a facility for international students at Parafield. Now, that's basically the Purringa facility in Adelaide for international students. So I think we're going to see more and more of this in the short term as the globe basically works towards the task of ensuring we've vaccinated the billions of people around the globe and the 24 million Australians who live and enjoy the benefits of the best country on earth.
Tony Passon, Member for Barkers with me. Let's talk about your government's 10-year Stronger Rural Health Strategy and hone in on bulk billing payments for doctors based on remoteness. What's this plan?
Well, we know that, and we've spoken before, Jenny, about the need to encourage GPs out into rural, regional, remote Australia. One of the ways we can do that is providing bulk billing incentives, because not only do we need them into regional Australia, but we want to encourage them when they're there to offer the same sort of fee proposition that is offered to people living in Adelaide, i.e. bulk billing as a very high percentage of what takes place. And in order to do that, we've acknowledged that we need to provide incentives. This program runs to about $65 million. They're government incentives to encourage GPs out into the region and to bulk bill when they are. That includes the GPs who are out. So we want more bulk billing from the cohort we have in regional, remote and rural Australia, but we also want to encourage more doctors out to the region. There's no simple solution to the challenge we've got in Australia, which is the malapportionment of doctors. There are too many GPs in the cities, not enough in the regions. One of the ways we can do this is effectively a little bit of sugar on the table to encourage people out into those regional communities. Each of these GPs are running small businesses. They respond to the profit incentive effectively, and we're just trying to increase opportunities for them to garner that profit.
Right, so that means that more people in remote communities will be able to get free services, bulk billed services, when seeing their doctor, and the doctor will be able to get those subsidies?
That's the aim of this initiative. So we're effectively transferring those gap payments from the patient's back pocket to the Commonwealth's treasurers, if you like. It won't mean that every service is free. It'll just increase the likelihood that bulk billing services will be available. And more specifically, there'll be specific incentives for doctors who increase their bulk billing rates.
Now, we have a very strong support among our listeners for universal coverage of healthcare. 90% of our poll responders recently said that we should be universally covering people's medical needs, because there have been some concerns about potential increases to costs for some surgeries come July 1 when the Medicare rebates scheme changes. It's a bit confusing for a lot of us to get our heads around. What can you tell us about this? Could it cost $10,000 for some surgeries?
Well, Jenny, the first thing to say here is that we do have universal health care in Australia. Medicare is a credit to successive governments, and in particular to Prime Minister Bob Hawke and his administration. But every government since has built on that network and strengthened it. The issue we're talking about here is from time to time, listings on the MBS are reviewed. So that's the medical benefit scheme, basically how much Medicare will pay for each and every procedure. One of the challenges is over time, some procedures become a deal more efficient. If I can take some orthopaedic surgeries, for example, which are attracting some attention, hip and knee replacements are not the surgeries they used to be. Much of the equipment that's used, including the prosthesis, the knee, the hip, are a lot cheaper than they were once upon a time when we set the rate on the MBS. Now, we're concerned that those savings aren't flowing through to consumers, the patients. We make an assessment, the medical practitioners that are responsible to determine the rate of the MBS and what should and shouldn't be covered, they're recommending that a number of these items be effectively lower on the MBS, that is less of a rebate from the government to the doctor, or the payment from the government to the doctor on account of the fact these procedures are much easier because of technology and because of the consumables are cheaper. And so this is really becoming quickly a conversation, in my view, for specialists who need to recalibrate their prices in relation to this. They understandably are pushing back, Jenny, because they don't want them to undertake these procedures for a lower fee. But unfortunately, the reality here is they're doing a lot more of these, a lot quicker, with a lot cheaper inputs, and that needs to be reflected at the price the customer pays, in this case, the patient. Now, if there's no movement on that from the specialists, governments are likely to change the MBS listing and people will be left with significant gaps. And I'd be disappointed in that, because I think these are amazing people, the doctors who undertake the surgery. They're incredibly well-skilled, well-trained, highly regulated. But I don't think too many of them are struggling for their next dollar, Jenny. They're all incredibly well remunerated. And I think we need to be conscious that healthcare remains affordable in the country, because, of course, the more the Commonwealth pays in relation to certain items, the less it can pay in relation to other items. And also, if we extend this to the PBS, the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, when drugs get cheaper, the government downgrades how much we're prepared to pay drug companies to put them on the PBS. This is no different.
And I hear you're undertaking quite a big survey at the moment.
Barker's biggest survey. The biggest survey we've ever done in Barker. But it's hard to stay in contact with 120,000 people at any one time. So this survey is an opportunity for people to give me their feedback. Good, bad and indifferent. And last time, you know, it was an interesting exercise reading it, humbling, I've got to tell you. But we want to stay connected and in touch. And I want what I'm focusing on to be driven by what constituents want my priorities to be. And Jenny, is a little incentive, if people return their survey by the end of July, they'll be in the draw to win an Apple iPad.
Thanks so much for your time today, Tony Passon.
Thanks, Jenny.